Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
This is Ross Coulthart, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I am delighted to be joined by the co-founder of the Stargate program at Stanford Research Institute with Hal Puthoff, author of multiple books on the subjects of ESP and remote viewing. He is a pioneering laser physicist. I'd love to welcome the legendary Russell Targ. Russell, welcome to the podcast.
Very happy to be with you this morning.
Very good to have you on too. Russell, when I put out a few days ago to say you were coming on, huge response from people on YouTube, on Patreon, and all over the internet. So it's wonderful to finally have you on. But I'd love to start right back at the beginning. And for those who may be unfamiliar with who Russell Targ is, can you give us a little bit of an introduction as to you and your background?
I was born in Chicago, Illinois, 1934. That shows that I survived 90 years of life in America. I was always interested in magic and sleight of hand. My father had a bookstore before he became a famous publisher, and the bookstore sold so-called tricks and jokes, sort of magic tricks that an eight-year-old could master. And I became very interested in magic and sleight of hand. My vision is very poor, as you probably catch on to watching me here. So if I could use a little psychic ability to advance over what my vision would provide, that was always good. So I was a very successful card player, and I eventually figured out that I was probably supplementing my bridge playing skills with whatever ESP came my way. So I had been doing magic on the stage in New York for birthday parties and art openings. And from time to time, I would pretend to be reading someone's mind as part of a trick called billet reading, where I got some information about a person and then pretend to be reading their mind. And in doing that kind of pretend mind reading, I would often get slips of information where I could actually see what the person's house was. And as I approached the end of high school, I realized that people were making their living studying psychic abilities with the American Society for Psychical Research, and I became friends with them. And by the time I was 16, I gave up stage magic, or gave up pretend magic, for studying psychic abilities. I became very experienced with what was actually being done in the laboratories. And I had the idea that I would like to do research in psychic abilities, research in ESP. And I often went to their meetings in New York City, City College of New York, and a very amiable, intelligent group of professors doing research in ESP. And what they had in common, they were all poor. Now, I grew up in the Depression era of Chicago, and one of the things that I learned is that I didn't want to replicate being poor. So I decided that I would not create my life as an ESP researcher, but rather I would follow my other passion, which was psychic, which was modern physics. So I got my degree from Queens College in New York in physics, and then got a graduate fellowship to Columbia University, where I could study ionization and gases. And that led me to an opportunity to take part in the very first laser research in the world. I worked with Gordon Gould, who is the inventor of the laser. And that was because I happened to have useful experience from Columbia. So I worked with Gordon for a number of years. We worked on the earliest laser. We didn't build the first laser, but we published among the first papers dealing with lasers. And then I moved to California and set up a laser lab at General Telephone. And by 1970, I had built the most powerful CO2 carbon dioxide laser in the world, with a 1,000-watt laser. Could burn a hole right through a fire brick. And I realized at that time, I had the chips available to trade in my laser chips for the idea of starting up a ESP laboratory, which is what I wanted to do. And I had built things for NASA, and I got an invitation to go to NASA and talk about American and Soviet research and psychic abilities. I'll spare you how I happened to get that invitation. The whole sequence of surprising events, where I was lecturing at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, and the director of new projects at NASA came and liked my lecture and invited me to a conference on speculative technology at St. Simon's Island and for NASA. And I went to that conference, and I was interested in starting a program, and I knew that NASA could help support me. And what I'm fishing for is a game that I have on the internet. This is a four-choice ESP game, which offers feedback and reinforcement. You want to guess one of those four pictures. And I lectured about that, among other things, at NASA. And Wernher von Braun was in my audience. And he did very, very well, this four-choice game, offering feedback and reinforcement. And he confessed to me that he had been always very psychic with his grandmother and was very interested in ESP, although he had never done any research in that. So in this lecture here, I am sort of outing Wernher von Braun as a closet psychic, which I think nobody else knows. But von Braun took me to the director of NASA, Jim Fletcher, and said, Russ has built some lasers for us that work very well. He's now interested in using a ESP teaching machine, which he has here, to help astronauts become aware of any possible flaws in the spacecraft. They had just dealt with a defect in Apollo 13, which almost crashed due to a defect in the oxygen tank, where they was an onboard accident. And I said, if astronaut could become aware or sympathetic with a spacecraft, you could avoid losing a spacecraft. And somehow Von Braun and Jim Fletcher thought that that all made sense. The idea that in the Foundation series of Isaac Asimov, the great semanticist said, just remember, nothing has to be true. A thing just has to sound true. So somehow, my story for Wernher von Braun and Jim Fletcher, that I could teach astronauts how to become psychic with their spacecraft, that somehow all made sense to them. And they agreed to give me a contract to set up a laboratory. And as we were talking, the astronaut Edgar Mitchell came strolling by. It just happened. And he said, well, I'm working for SRI now. I could help Russell set up a lab at SRI because I work for Charlie Anderson, who's the president of SRI. So because I was at the NASA conference with my ESP game, I was able to get money from NASA to set up a ESP laboratory in 1972, set this up at SRI. And I'm telling you this long story because people in the field, people in the ESP research, recognize that my colleague Hal Puthoff and I are both laser pioneer, well known for our laser work, but had no antecedents for ESP research. So people consider it quite magical. How did we show up with a $100,000 program at SRI to teach people how to be psychic? Where what made us think that we knew how to do that?
You met Hal Puthoff at a lecture, I believe. Is that right?
That's right. He was lecturing in San Francisco on American Soviet ESP research, and I was lecturing on the same thing. We had both read the psychic discoveries behind the Iron Curtain, and I knew the women, Ostrander and Schroeder, who wrote that book. I met them. My father was a New York publisher, and I met Ostrander and Schroeder at his birthday party. So I had the inside story of psychic discoveries. So I was lecturing on their book and what they had told me. And Hal had lectured. He spoke Russian, among other things. So, and we were both laser guys in Silicon Valley. We're neighbors. We didn't know each other. I was known at that time for my very powerful CO2 laser, which could cut a hole on a fire brick. So he knew who I was. And I asked him at his lecture that I told him I'm dealing with NASA now. I've built stuff for them in the past. If I could get money from NASA, could I join you at SRI and create an ESP laboratory? And he said, that would be terrific. So when I met Edgar Mitchell at St. Simon's Island, Edgar Mitchell agreed to take money from Art Reitz, who listened to my lecture in San Francisco, and all the pieces fell together. We had a big meeting with the president of SRI, Charlie Anderson, and within a month, we had a program at SRI.
So,
and Ingo Swann was already there working with Hal. And Ingo Swann said, you guys, I'm not going to guess cards for you guys. I want to do something that's worthy of my talent. Otherwise, I'm going home. This card guessing stuff is a trivialization of my ability, said Ingo. So he said, well, what do you want to do? He said, you go hide somewhere, have someone hide in the San Francisco Bay Area anywhere, and I will tell you what it looks like where they are. That sounded like a good double-blind experiment. I would stay home at SRI and interview Ingo, and Hal and a lab director would hide somewhere, and Ingo would describe what that looked like. And Ingo was able to do that very successfully. Hal could go to the bank or a swimming pool or wherever he wanted to go, and Ingo would sit with me in a shielded room, close his eyes, and make a drawing of what it looked like where Hal was hiding. And Ingo said we should call that remote viewing. It's not necessarily mental telepathy, because you're not reading my mind. You're able to see where I am and see what I'm doing. So Ingo Swann, it's a little money from NASA, and the coincidental appearance of Ingo Swann allowed us to start an ESP program where our goal was to find people in the laboratory or in the neighborhood who are interested in learning how to develop their psychic abilities. And we did that for a decade.
You did, and I'm going to discuss that decade with you. You've had an incredible upbringing, even till you hit the 1970 era, before you get to SRI. And I wonder, let's take it back to basics. In your own words, what exactly is remote viewing?
Remote viewing is an ability that we all have to quiet our minds and describe and experience what's happening in a distant place or in the future. The thing that we know is it is no harder to describe something 1,000 miles away than it is to describe something across the street. Similarly, from our experiments, we know that it's no harder to describe something that's going to happen in the future than it is to describe something that's happening contemporaneously. So we demonstrated that you can see into the distance. Our favorite customer was the CIA, who supported our work. And one of the tasks that they gave us, we worked with the great psychic Ingo Swann and Pat Price. Price was able to quiet his mind and describe a Soviet atomic bomb factory in Soviet Siberia, in Semipalatinsk. And he could describe, we were given the geographical coordinates of Semipalatinsk, just given a piece of paper, and the CIA said, can you tell us what's going on there? And Pat Price and I went to a shielded room where we like to work. And I said, here's a slip of paper. We have no idea what's there, but our friends at the CIA would like you to try and describe what's going on at the place corresponding to these coordinates. And Pat said, I'm visualizing that I'm lying on top of a building. The sun feels good to me, and there's a huge crane rolling back and forth over my body. Great big gantry crane. And it's an eight-wheel crane, four wheels on either side of the track, and this big crane is rolling back and forth. And I said, can you draw that? And he said, sure I can. And he made a very nice drawing, which you cannot quite see on the wall behind me, but I've numerous things that I've published. I have a recent book called Third Eye Spies, which contain all the pictures that I'm going to be talking about. It's not convenient for me to show pictures right now, But Ingo drew a picture of this four-wheel gantry crane, which greatly resembled the crane at Semipalatinsk. And the next day they said, well, that was really terrific. Can you tell us what they're doing in this building? Why do they have this big crane running around? And Hans said, well, they're assembling a giant sphere, a steel sphere, 60 feet in diameter, and they're welding it together. And he made us a drawing of this big sphere. And 2 years later, as the Soviets dismantled this facility, people in the West got to see the 60-foot diameter sphere for the first time that was welded together. An important idea, I should tell you at the outset, in many cases, it's clear that the remote viewer is not necessarily describing where the person is hiding, but rather describing the feedback he gets at the end of the experiment. So, for example, our most successful, the easiest to do experiment is the psychic hide and go seek. Somebody's hiding in the Bay Area, and a visitor in the laboratory has the job of describing where the person is hiding, and then we will take that person, the visitor, to the hiding place for feedback. And it's a perfectly good double-blind experiment. I'm the interviewer, and I have no idea where they're hiding. Could be anywhere in the Bay Area. I've just instructed the skeptic, or the person who's visiting me, or the government officer is visiting me. My instructions are, quiet your mind if you know how to do that. Take a couple of deep breaths and tell me about the surprising images that show up in your awareness. That's my instruction, to just tell me about the new surprising images that show up in your awareness. And with that clue, they can often very accurately describe where the other person is hiding. And then at the end of that experiment, we will take the viewer to that hiding place. And indeed, it turns out that the place that he drew and described is where the person is hiding. Now, it's possible that he is describing what he sees at a later time when we took him there, or he might be describing where they were actually hiding. Now, we have experiments where the person did not get any feedback because they died. So there are cases with Ingo Swann, who is a great psychic, and Pat Price, who is also an outstanding psychic. There are experiments with both of those people where they did outstanding remote viewing for us, but unfortunately they passed away before they got any feedback. So we know for a fact that although sometimes people will describe the feedback they receive, that is not necessary if they can't get feedback for some reason, like passing away, they can describe the target anyway.
Now, that's really interesting. You mentioned Pat Price and Ingo Swann, the two most famous remote viewers. How did they discover their abilities? You mentioned these are latent or suppressed abilities. Everyone can do this. How did those individuals discover that they could do this?
I know that Ingo Swann was a lifetime psychic, because he told us that he was making paintings as a young person of his views of the galaxy and the solar system. So he was a childhood psychic, aware of his abilities. Pat Price, to the best of my ability, learned to be psychic through his association with the Scientology Association. L. Ron Hubbard, in addition to starting Scientology, was a scholar of Eastern philosophy, and psychic abilities were well understood for hundreds of years in Buddha's teaching. Let's see what's on my, you can see on my wall, there's a picture of somebody, of a Buddhist, and that Buddhist is named Padmasambhava, and he is the one who brought Buddhism to Tibet. There was a lot of internecine fighting in Tibet over religion, and the king of Tibet knew a famous Buddha's teacher, Padmasambhava, and invited him to come to Tibet to teach people about Buddhism. And he did that. And he then wrote this book, early book, in the 800s, Self-Liberation Through Seeing with Naked Awareness. So Padmasambhava was writing 1,200 years ago about how to quiet your mind and take part in naked awareness, which became called timeless awareness. He was aware that you could move your thoughts through space and through time and describe what was there. And if you would give up your desire to name things and grasp onto them, then you could do it much more successfully. Naming and grasping is the enemy of psychic ability. So we try and get people to describe what are you experiencing rather than what do you think it is. So this was all understood 1,200 years ago. So the psychic ability is not New Age, but rather was part of Buddhist practice 1,200 years ago.
When you talked about your early childhood and deliberately trying to trick people and pretend to read minds, you say you would get real pieces of information would slip through, for example, where that person lived, what their house looked like. How did those guesses differ from those real pieces of information? Was it a feeling? Was it a vibration? What was it like?
In my experience, it's visual. So when I'd be standing on the stage, or in recent cases where Hal Puthoff had gone on vacation somewhere, I'll tell you about that. The short answer to your question is that most people experience, we call it remote viewing because it's a visual experience. We say don't name the place. Just tell us what your experience. What's the surprising image? So what happened once with Pat Price, we'd been doing a series of experiments with Price where my colleague, Hal Puthoff, had gone on vacation. There was a break in our experiments. He went to South America someplace. No one knew where he was going. So each day, I would sit in our little shielded room. Everyone liked being in an electrically shielded room because the shielding prevents electrostatic interference with ESP, apparently. So we would be sitting in our little shielded phone booth, and each day Pat Price would describe to me that Hal is going to a harbor or a church or a market or some other thing in South America. And on day five, Pat Price didn't show up. And this was an important series of experiments because we were demonstrating or planned to demonstrate that distance doesn't interfere with remote viewing, which we suspected was the case. So on day five, it happened that We knew that Pat Price was going to leave our laboratory because the CIA was nervous about Price working with a bunch of hippies in California. And since they knew that Pat Price could see anything in their laboratory, including whatever was on their desk, the idea of having a high-quality psychic outside of their control made the CIA very nervous. So they were sort of grabbed or hired Pat Price to leave California and come to the East Coast and take part in ongoing requirements of the CIA. And on the day of our fifth trial, Price was gone. The CIA had made him an offer that he couldn't refuse, so he left SRI, and I was left by myself. And I didn't know what was going on, so I'd already put on a tape recorder. This is a remote viewing with Russ Targ and Pat Price. We're describing where Hal put off his hiding someplace in South America. But Price isn't here, so I will describe this the best of my ability. And I said, it looks like a airport on an island. And as we're sitting here right now, I'm looking at the picture that I drew, of an island airport where I can see the airport going from the left to the right. And there's ocean at the end of the runway. There's an airport building on the left, sand and gravel on the right. And I drew a picture of that. And that was the fifth trial. And eventually I got feedback. And the feedback picture that I got very greatly resembles what I drew, because I was sitting in my little office, and I know for a fact that nobody gave me the answer. This is my very first remote viewing, and I drew this interesting picture. That's, again, a picture that's in my book, Third Eye Spies, where I drew this diagonal airport ending with ocean at the end of the runway, grass and gravel on the right, and airport building on the left. And that turned out to be one of the most accurate remote viewings from our series. The agreement was that the researchers, like Hal Puthoff and I, were not supposed to take part in experiments, because if you do have a program where the people who are producing the ESP are also the researchers, it looks bad for the credibility of the program. You want the researchers to stand off to the side and watch what's going on. And that's what we had done throughout the balance of the program. Neither Helen nor I had taken part in any experiments. But this was an emergency situation. The psychic was gone. Hal was in South America. And somebody had to do it. And I was the person in the booth. So it turned out that this was my very first trial, and it was among the most accurate drawings that we ever had. So that continued to convince us that psychic ability is probably not very hard to do, because even a scientist can do it. So, that picture eventually became published.
This episode is sponsored by True Classic. I'm excited for this one, folks, as truly, it may be my first sponsor I've had that I'm a long-time user of the product already. I genuinely wear True Classic stuff quite a lot throughout my week. If, like me, you've got a whole wardrobe of stuff that has a generic fit and is not tailored to you, it can be frustrating. I wonder how many of you out there right now do that t-shirt pull at the midriff around your gut because it just doesn't sit quite right. It's annoying. True Classic is here to finally give you clothes that are stylish and designed to fit you without destroying your bank balance. It's designed to accentuate your best features, snug in the arms and chest, and I'm wearing a t-shirt right now and doing that as I say it, so it's true. With with just the right amount of room in the midsection, no more pulling all day. All their clothing can be mixed and matched and designed to work with your lifestyle. So for me, going from dad to podcaster to husband, it covers the range of my day. True Classic also provide you with a 100% perfect fit guarantee and easy returns for peace of mind. Right now, you can unlock big savings when you bundle items site-wide. Just go to my exclusive link, trueclassic.com/thatufo to save. That's trueclassic.com/thatufo. Shop now and elevate your wardrobe today. Let me ask you, why do you think you were so successful? It seems very easy for you and very humble to say that anyone can do this, but do you think there was anything else to the fact that on your very first go doing this, off the cuff, unprepared, you managed to get such an accurate representation of what you were trying to find?
Well, that's a two-part question. We know that almost anybody can do it, because my job for my first 10 years was to teach people how to do remote viewing. As we would have people for the government who wanted to see something psychic. What do you got? We've been paying you guys hundreds of thousands of dollars, and people turning out these great pictures. We want to see what that looks like. Could you have Pat Price or somebody do a remote viewing for us? And my answer usually is no, because if we do, one of the attributes that I brought to this job is my background in magic. And I wanted to avoid doing something that looks like a magic trick. So if I have the government scientist go hide someplace and Ingo Swann describes where he is, the government scientist would worry, How did they tell Ingo where I was? But if I sit with a guy and say, your major is going to hide somewhere with hell put off, they will be handed traveling instructions from our safe. I have no idea where they're going. Hal doesn't know where they're going to go. No one knows where they are. And it's just you and me in the vault here, and it's 10 o'clock now. I want you to quiet your mind and describe what you're experiencing with regard to the place that the major is hiding. And the fact that I could jolly people along who had no knowledge of ESP, didn't believe in psychic abilities. And the deal was that he's an army man. His job is to investigate psychic ability. So he's sort of on the spot. He doesn't believe in this stuff. But the guy he's paying hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, should be me. I'm telling him, I'm sitting with the major, and his job is to describe what it looks like where his partner's hiding, and I'm telling him how to do it, he will do it. So I set the stage where he could either fight with me over how impossible this is, or he could just close his eyes and describe the pictures that appear. And in general, people will agree to close their eyes and describe the picture that appears. And we've had very good success with that. I've had all kinds of skeptical government officers write up, including the Undersecretary of Defense, Walter LaBerge. I'm basically a researcher, and we began to get overwhelmed with requests from the Army and the CIA to do tasks for try and find kidnapped soldiers, downed airplanes, missing submarines. So we became overwhelmed with tasks to do for the CIA, DIA, Air Force. And what I wanted to do instead is teach, is create a psychic Army Corps, which became called Stargate. So I said, can you put together a bunch of people who are willing to learn remote viewing, and they will become the basis of a new program out of the Army Intelligence arena. And that happened. They allowed me to do that. We had to choose six people from a big group of men and women who agreed to learn remote viewing. And that was a program that Walter LaBerge proposed to me if I could show him something psychic. So even the Undersecretary of Defense, in a stress condition, working with me, and his job as a soldier, the Undersecretary of Defense, was to describe where the major was hiding, and he did that excellently. And that was really my job for a decade, to sit with various skeptics, generally skeptics with money. So my job, in a certain sense, was to show the people with money that we were really doing remote viewing, that there was no trick involved, that even a Army officer or a cabinet official in the government could learn to do remote viewing excellently. There was a natural ability. And these guys, this I'm sort of answering one of your earlier questions, these guys didn't have any practice. Walter LaBerge flew in with his helicopter, landed in our parking lot, came up to my laboratory and said, I want to see something psychic. And I said, okay, I'm going to show you how to do it. And he said, I don't believe in this. I can't do it. I said, well, you're here to see something psychic. I've taught hundreds of people how to do this. My feeling is that you're probably as good as any enlisted man that you sent to me, and I'll show you how to do it. And he then described where his major was hiding. And that was really my job from 1972 to 1982 when I left.
What are some of the misconceptions around remote viewing? You know, what it isn't?
The misconceptions about what?
About remote viewing. So, for example, people who may be skeptical of it or unsure as to what exactly it is. I got a few questions, Russell. You know, why aren't all remote viewers rich? Because they could remote view the lottery numbers, for example. So some of those myths that come around remote viewing.
Well, the best evidence I have two strong pieces of evidence for remote viewing. One is the CIA is not easily amused, as you may realize, and they supported our work for a decade. We got a couple of million dollars a year from the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency for finding downed airplanes, finding kidnapped officers, and our job to earn our keep was to find these. We found a downed Russian airplane. Jimmy Carter described this in, we made a film called Third Eye Spies. And that film opens with Jimmy Carter saying, the most amazing thing that occurred during my presidency was we were looking for a downed Russian airplane with reconnaissance code books on board. We couldn't find it because it crashed in the jungle, but a psychic in California was able to quiet her mind and give us coordinates showing where the plane crashed, and we were able to send in a helicopter and find the downed Russian airplane. So that was sort of what our life was like. We were trying to understand the accuracy and reliability of psychic functioning, and also pacify our customers like the President of the United States and people from CIA. There was never an instance where somebody thought that we were deceived. See, my background in magic was very helpful because I was very scrupulous in making sure that nobody fooled us, no magician showed up to trick us. As we were doing these experiments, the physics experiments, they're under very tight control. So we worked for a decade, actually 2 decades. I was there for a decade, and there was never any instance where anyone even suspected that there was any trickery involved. So our good reputation was part of the reason you can believe that this is all true. The other is, after I left SRI, I started a similar small group called Delphi Associates, where we were using psychic ability to forecast changes in the silver commodity market. And I won't describe how that was done, but we made 9 forecasts as to whether silver would go up a little, up a lot, down a little, or down a lot. And all 9 of our forecasts were correct, and we made $250,000. We published that, and it was written up in the Wall Street Journal. And as you realize, there's no way to do a trick to learn which way the stock market is going. And now there's a whole little industry of people in International Remote Viewing Association. People are interested in applying psychic abilities to forecast the market. So we have not had any problem with people not believing what we were doing, because we were doing operational things for the government and looking into the stock market, all with great success.
Can you talk about one of the big successes was the Patty Hearst kidnapping case? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, in February of 1994, Patty Hearst was kidnapped. Patty, the daughter of the owner of the San Francisco Examiner, a famous Hearst wealthy, she was a wealthy heiress at City College. See, I'm from New York, so it would be called City College. It was the Berkeley part of the University of California, where she was a student, and the Seminese Liberation Army, handful of rebels, kidnapped her. And nobody knew where they were, of course. It was great embarrassment that the heiress was kidnapped. So eventually the district attorney in Berkeley, where she lived, called Stanford Research Institute and said, would we help? And Pat Price said, oh yeah, I was a police commissioner in Burbank. I know how to do that. And my partner Hal Putoff and I and Pat Price went to the police department in Berkeley. And Price said, well, let me see your mug book, which is a big loose leaf binder that every police station has. And the mug book is a picture listing of all the so-called usual suspects. That is all the people they've arrested in recent times. And Price said, well, let me look through your mug book and I'll find the guy. And we all stood around this big oak table, Hal and me and Pat Price and a bunch of police detectives. And Price turned page after page as we watched him. And then he got through a page and said, "That's the man, Donald DeVries." And Price put his finger on the guy. And he said, "Donald DeVries was the ringleader." And he said, "I suppose you want to know where he is. Is that right?" And everybody laughed and said, "Yeah, can you tell me where he is?" He said, "Yeah. He went, as they say in the movie, he went that way and pointed north. He said, he's driven down Bayshore Freeway, and he got a white station wagon parked by some water, some gas purification tanks across from a diner." And one of the policemen said, "Well, I know where that is. It's on my way, on the way to my house in Northern California, in Marin." So they sent a police car out, and 20 minutes later, they found the kidnapped car, and they knew it was the right car because there were still shells on the floor of the car from where the kidnappers were firing into the neighborhood as they kidnapped Patricia Hearst. So we know that the car that Pat Price sent us to what was the kidnap car they were looking for. And in due course, after they found the car, they also, Donald DeVries surfaced with ads in the newspaper and said, "We're not just a bunch of criminals. We want help to feed the poor in Berkeley. A lot of poor people in Berkeley and Oakland, California. And the Hearst family is super millionaires. We're not looking for cash. We're looking for money to feed the poor." And Donald Reed surfaced as the voice of the Sudanese Liberation Army. So we knew at that time that Pat Price had walked into the police station, turned the pages of the book, and put his finger on the ringleader. So that was one of the outstanding, and of course we didn't catch Donald DeVries because the police killed him in a shootout in Los Angeles, and Patty Hearst ran away to a farm in upstate New York, and eventually was captured when she returned to San Francisco. So that did not have a good outcome, but we did find the ringleader, and we correctly identified where they were.
So there's some very successful practical applications to remote viewing, and you and your group have demonstrated these to the CIA, to the police, in a big way. Are there any dangers of remote viewing, whether that be it's in the wrong hands, i.e. Russian, Chinese, authorities, or any dangers to the remote viewer, even themselves? Apologies.
Well, remote viewing is not as remote viewing as we were doing at SRI was not a secret thing. As we were publishing our remote viewing in the San Francisco Bay Area, and even some of the long distance things where Hal would go to South America. So we published things that we had done, but along the same time, we were doing operational things for the CIA and the DIA. So we never encountered any danger. I went to eventually 1984, I went to Russia. We had already published our findings, so I was invited to come to Russia and be part of a meeting with Soviet Academy of Sciences. And that led to a very interesting case. I gave a lecture to the Soviet Academy of Sciences about remote viewing. They knew about remote viewing because we had published it. And I met with a Russian researcher, Ruben Agazimson, in Soviet Armenia, and he was doing remote viewing, and we went to Armenia, and he was doing experiments very much like what we were doing, and found that frequently the remote viewer in his laboratory would describe where the person was going to be even before it was chosen. So this, what discovered is that you would often or occasionally get precognitive noise where the viewer would have information about the hiding place of the distant person even before it was chosen. But when I lectured in Russia, they're very interested in this, and they're big. I ended my talk as said, and what we know from this is that it's no longer possible to hide anything. There are no secrets anymore. And that led to a great rattling of teacups, because in the Kremlin here, big, beautiful room full of red tapestry and gold hangings, and an American researcher is trying to explain to the heart of the Kremlin that, I don't know what you guys are doing, but I want to tell you there are no secrets anymore. And they said, well, is there anything you would like to see as long as you're here? And I wondered what they had in mind. And what they didn't know is, a few weeks before I had been invited to Russia, CIA, I was getting ready to leave the program, and the CIA asked me if I could have one of our viewers, Hella Hammett, could I have her describe what Brezhnev's office looks like in the Kremlin? And we had a promise that we had never been to the Kremlin. We don't know, had no idea what it looks like. So Hella came in my office, and I said, well, today we're going to the Kremlin, Hella. CIA wants to know what Brezhnev's office looks like. I want you to just lie down on a comfy couch, and we'll go together. We'll go to Russia and see what we can find. And she said, okay, I said, well, why just close your eyes and do the best you can, take us to the Kremlin. She said, well, I'm walking down a corridor hung with red silk brocade. At the end of this corridor, long corridor, there's a door covered with red leather held in place by bright upholstery tacks, brass upholstery tacks. And I said, well, is that Brezhnev's office? She said, I don't know, but this is where I wound up. I said, well, can you open the door? Well, what she said, the door is closed. I said, well, I'll open it for you. And she said, well, it's still dark inside. I said, well, turn on the lights. This is though I'm leading her in a dream. So she tells me what she can do, and I can help her along the way. So I said, okay, I've turned on, it's called a lucid dream. So I said, okay, I'll turn on the lights. What do you see now? She said, well, out the window on the left, I can see Red Square. I can see the famous cathedral with all the paintings on the outside. And there's a big desk in the room, very large wooden desk with covered with glass. And behind the desk, there's a door in the wall. So I said, well, let's open that door and see where it goes. She said, well, it goes down a flight of metal stairs, and on the right there's a computer room. And a lot of people working in a computer room. And I said, you know, Helen, I'm beginning to feel a little frightened. I have a lot of top secret clearances, but I have no clearance to be in a computer room in the Kremlin. I feel that they know we're here. I feel that we're being surveilled. So I think we gave them enough information. Let's get out of here. And it turned out that the information that I gave them was largely correct. And I know that they're largely correct because 2 years later, when I was invited to the Kremlin to lecture, I wanted them to let me see Brezhnev's office. I said, I know Brezhnev is not there anymore. He had just retired. So I don't need to see the prime minister, but I want to see his office. And indeed, you walk down this hall with red brocade hanging from the ceiling and the door at the end of the hall where I stood after our experiment, and the door was indeed covered with red leather, bright gold upholstery tacks, and they could open the door, let me walk in, and indeed, a red square without the window on the left, you could see the famous church, and on the right, you could see his big desk covered with, big wooden desk covered with glass. Unfortunately, I can't remember or did not notice if there was a door in that wall. Somebody would have to hypnotize me. I was in the room, my eyes were open, so presumably if there was a door in the wall, I could remember it. But I was so overcome with the other things that I saw, like the door covered with red leather and the big wooden desk, that I don't get an A+ for being a spy. But all the things that I could remember when I came back from Brezhnev's office perfectly matched what Hela had to say weeks earlier at SRI 6,000 miles away.
Let me just take you back to, you mentioned Pat Price leaving and going to the CIA. Am I right that it was only 4 months after Pat Price left SRI to go to the CIA that he was found dead?
That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free, and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.